Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Monday, March 21st, day 11 of 9/11 on trial. You're watching Wing TV, and I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. To start things off, we have real good news. On Friday, we ran out of our entire second shipment of 9/11 on trial, but today, the third shipment arrived. So all of the orders that we couldn't ship out on Friday, we're going to put them in the mail today. So we're glad that they arrived. Also, we've been getting some responses in the pages of the Center Daily Times about my op-ed piece that ran about a week and a half ago. The first was from a gentleman named Kevin Zarnick. And the first thing he did was he must have went through our site and found some of my old writings, because he quotes me and he says, "We hold zero respect for these New World Order journalists that have sold their souls by becoming henchmen for the global elite that has infiltrated our government and corrupted it to its very core." I stand by that, don't you?
Unless he's calling us the henchmen of the global elite.
No.
New World Order journalist.
Yeah. I mean, it was good that people got to read this, because probably half the people reading it said, yeah, I agree with that. But then he goes on to say, and here's where the best part is. He says, "Perhaps we can learn where Elvis is living, that President Franklin Roosevelt knew about the Japanese plan to attack Pearl Harbor and did nothing, that there was no Holocaust in Europe, or that the Earth is actually shaped like a banana, but NASA has been doctoring photos for years." What do you think of that?
I think he needs to read the book.
Yeah, and the funny thing is this book, there was nothing in it about Elvis, there was nothing in it about Franklin Roosevelt, or the Holocaust, or NASA. And in fact, it's pretty common knowledge nowadays that everyone knows that Franklin D. Roosevelt had pre-knowledge about Pearl Harbor. And in my book, The New World Order Exposed, we actually show a transcript of him speaking with Winston Churchill 11 days before Pearl Harbor, and they're asking each other, what are we going to do now when the Japanese attack Pearl Harbor? So, you can try again. The second one came from a woman named Andrea McGraw, and the title was, "What If Column Sets Bad Example?" Now, Andrea rambles for a little bit, and then she says, "For example, add a zero to the temperature cited, 500 to 600 degrees, and the statement, the fires within each tower never rose above, and it is more in the range that I read and believe more reasonable." So Andrea is saying that the temperatures within the towers rose to 5,000 to 6,000 degrees. Now, Lisa, what's the temperature of molten steel?
5,182, that's the boiling point of steel.
So right.
Molten.
So she's saying that the temperatures went even above the boiling point of molten steel. So, but the part that's most interesting is she says that she read this and she believes this. Now, in my book, what I do is I prove all the facts and verify all the facts. So there's a big difference between reading and believing, like Andrea, and proving and verifying, like we did in this book. So
these two people are a representative sample of how much work we need to do still in our own community to wake people up.
Yeah, and best of all is Andrea didn't read, or I mean, she didn't order or read a copy of this book, so she's just going on what she believes. It's pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Today's testimony revolves around melting steel. Witness 7 will be doing the testimony, and now let's join the proceedings with Judge Alan Kirkpatrick.
Please be seated. Court is now in session. Today we will continue with the people's case against the United States federal government in regards to the events of September 11, 2001 at the World Trade Center Towers in New York City. Let us proceed. Witness, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Your Honor, today we would like to welcome Witness number 7, who's going to speak about the melting steel at the World Trade Center towers. Witness, please state your name.
Adam Robertson.
Okay. The first question today is, in earlier testimony, it was revealed that never before in the history of the world had a steel building collapsed due to fire. Is this true?
Well, the fall of the South Tower, just 56 minutes after it had been hit, marked the first time in history that a steel-framed high-rise structure had suffered a total collapse due to fire.
All right. Had other steel buildings ever partially collapsed due to fire?
Never. Never before had such a building suffered even a partial collapse due to fire.
And what happened 29 minutes later after the South Tower fell?
At 10:28 a.m., the North Tower became the second steel-framed high-rise structure to suffer a total collapse due to fire.
Very good. Also now, as we'll see, World Trade Center Building number 7 brought the total to 3 steel building collapses within a span of 8 hours. But anyways, moving on, since we've seen that, until 9/11, steel buildings didn't collapse due to fire, we should look at the physics of this phenomenon. My next question to you is, what is the melting point of steel?
2,795 degrees Fahrenheit.
And what is the boiling point of steel when it becomes a molten liquid?
That would be 5,182 degrees Fahrenheit.
Lastly, what is the melting point of aluminum?
1,148 degrees Fahrenheit.
And the absolute highest temperature that burning jet fuel can attain is what?
Jet fuel produces a maximum temperature of approximately 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit when mixed with air in perfect proportions.
And were the conditions perfect on the morning of 9/11 to reach this maximum temperature?
No. It is virtually impossible for an airplane crash to coincidentally mix the fuel and air in perfect proportions. Therefore, the temperature of the steel was significantly less than the maximum 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit.
In fact, using a very detailed, complex scientific formula, in Article 1, we calculated that the maximum floor temperature in World Trade Center towers as a result of burning jet fuel was only 536 degrees Fahrenheit. With this figure in mind, what is the variance between the melting point of steel and the actual temperatures created by this burning jet fuel?
2,795 degrees minus 536 degrees equals a variance of 2,259 degrees.
That's quite a difference. In other words, the actual floor temperature inside the towers created by burning jet fuel was only about 19% of that needed to melt construction-grade steel?
That is correct.
Could other factors, such as burning materials inside the towers, raise the temperature to 2,795 degrees?
Well, kerosene-based jet fuel, paper, or other combustibles normally found in towers cannot generate this much heat, especially in an oxygen-poor environment.
Okay, it seems we have some major discrepancies then between the official version of events and the laws of science. First, we were told by official sources that molten steel with a requisite temperature of 5,182 degrees Fahrenheit actually poured out over the sides of the World Trade Center towers. Is this possible?
All the pool of jet fuel in the world can't burn hot enough to produce molten steel under any conditions.
All right. In fact, is there any evidence at all that the aluminum, which comprised the decorative external facade with a melting point of only 1,148 degrees, melted?
The imagery of the World Trade Center does not reveal the aluminum siding of the World Trade Center towers deforming.
So, if the fires did not even melt the external aluminum casing, which had much less strength, is it possible that it could have melted the much stronger construction-grade steel at the World Trade Center core?
Given both time and temperature, the outer column should have been the structural weak link.
Thus, they would have been the most susceptible to fire, is that correct?
Given the mechanics of the heat escape, the outer columns were the most vulnerable to heat damage.
Okay, but since we didn't see any melting of the external aluminum casing, do you feel that the much stronger steel cores could have melted?
It's difficult to imagine the fires being so hot as to cause either catastrophic or abrupt damage to the World Trade Center vertical support structure.
And in your opinion, why is that?
None of the images of the outer steel structure show the otherwise expected red-hot glow.
So if the steel didn't melt, and they weren't turned to a liquid molten substance, how were the steel columns weakened?
All images show the outer shell mechanically destroyed versus collapsing from a thermal cause.
And what would a mechanical collapse, or would, I should say, would a mechanical collapse include controlled demolition?
Yes, it would.
Another discrepancy involves the previously mentioned BBC report, which stated the fires reached 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to melt steel floor supports. Was this claim accurate from your point of view?
No, as we've already mentioned, steel melts at 2,795 degrees Fahrenheit.
Lastly, the official version of events purports that burning fuel from the aircraft caused the World Trade Centers to collapse. Is this statement true in your opinion?
In my opinion, no. Kerosene fire can burn hot enough to melt steel.
Okay, let's try to put this matter into perspective. How long did it take the South Tower to collapse with a very minor office fire burning inside of it?
56 minutes.
And how long does it take? This might sound a little bit like a strange question, but how long does it take to cook a turkey?
It takes more than 56 minutes to cook a turkey.
Okay. And since these fires weren't spreading, how much damage could they do in 56 minutes in the South Tower?
The fires were not producing much heat. Even if every column had been stripped of its fireproofing, massive steel columns will not reach high temperatures in only 56 minutes from fires that are incapable of spreading to other flammable office furnishings.
So to melt steel then, what type of device does one need?
To melt steel, you need high temperature produced by an oxyacetylene torch, jet fuel burning in air, especially in an enclosed space with a building where there is much smoke and little oxygen. Just won't do it.
So an oxyacetylene torch then would be the only way to do that. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay. And what other methods or devices then are used to melt steel?
Acetylene torches, bottle, oxygen, electric arcs, blast furnaces, to name a few.
Okay. Final question, sir. To close, if a steel worker poured jet fuel into the tank of his acetylene torch, how effective would this be?
He'd be there till the end of time and wouldn't end up cutting a single piece of steel.
Thank you very much for your appearance today. No further questions, Your Honor.